Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along with us today. And of course, this is Friday, so it's Garden Talk. And Dick Zondag has joined us in our studio. He's the president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. And Dick, it's a pleasure to see you.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
An exciting year for you.
Yes, it's. We've had a lot of planning meetings and things going on to celebrate our 100th year in business, and found out a lot about the history of the company, and you know, some of it I had known, but there's a lot of it that I hadn't known. So we've developed some things that we have in the garden centers. We added 16 pages to the catalog, and if anybody has gotten the catalog, they know that it's not only the products that we sell, but there's a lot of history in the catalog. There are a lot of pictures of old catalog covers, and you know, I guess we were fortunate that Grandpa kept all of these old catalogs, because we have every catalog that has been published way back to the 1907. I have a copy of that, and of course we've got that in a safe spot. But it's kind of interesting watching how the catalog progressed from a 32-page stapled catalog that was printed on a hand press all the way up to what we're doing now with the sophisticated printings at Quad Graphics and a couple of other printing plants. And so it was a very interesting journey. We not only did that, but we did a calendar for the first time that we've been handing out in the garden center, and they're starting to run out. So, you know, we do have a few of them left in the garden centers. We also did a 32-page history book where we put together a history of the company right from the start with a timeline in it, and has a lot of really neat little stories in it, something about some of the employees that we've had that have either retired or passed away. And then we also, one of the traditions we do at the seed company is we have a lot of potluck dinners with our employees. And so over the last 10 or 12 years, I guess one of the things that I've always encouraged them to do is to put together a cookbook. And it, you know, at different times we had tried to start doing that, and it was hard to find somebody that would spearhead that. But then when we got the committee together, that was one of the ideas that came up. And so we put together a cookbook that has recipes from families, some of Grandma's old recipes, and employee recipes from those potlucks, and some of our suppliers, even some of our vendors who had good recipes are in there. So there's about 650 recipes in that three-ring binder. And so,
and Nick, I suppose they can get that through the website.
Yeah, we have it available at the website and the catalog. We also have it in the garden center. So
okay.
I think it's
$12.95. And what's the website address again?
It's just www.jungseed.com.
Okay, not plural, but jungseed.
Right.
.com. And there you'll find the Jung Centennial Cookbook, and of course the catalog is there. And then, of course, if you go to the garden centers, well, you'd be able to, as supplies last,
right,
pick up a calendar for 2007 and the history, the Centennial Commemorative Booklet from Jung's. But we're here also to take your questions today about gardening. And if you'd like to join in, we've a couple lines open for you in Madison. The local number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Tell me just a bit about your grandpa who started the company.
Well, Grandpa was born in Rubicon, Wisconsin. He was one of 10 children in the family, and they moved to the Randolph area when he was about 5 years old. And he actually credited his love of gardening from his mother. In those days, in the late 1800s, there weren't a lot of seed companies around, and so part of the garden was dedicated to producing produce that you used for eating. But then you also had a part of the garden that you planted back some of the onions and carrots and things like that, and then you let that go to seed so that you'd have seed for the next year. And Grandpa, even at a young age, was kind of an entrepreneur. He'd produce a little bit more, and then he'd try selling some of it in the area around Randolph. And so he got his start that way. And then after he graduated, he went to Oshkosh Business School and then apprenticed at a seed company in Rockford, Illinois called Buckbee's, which has since gone under. I was bought out by the R.H. Shumway catalog. But in 1907, he left Buckbee's and came back to Randolph and started the business in earnest on his father's farm. And Grandpa loved growing seeds, but he also loved printing. And so he had a small printing press that he had in his mother's in the family kitchen. And they actually allowed him to cut a hole in the side of the house and put the little gasoline engine that ran the press out in the woodshed. And so it was kind of a sort of a joke, I guess. But after a little while, he started to grow the business. And then Grandpa, great-grandpa, built a building on the farm for him. And that lasted for 10 or 15 years. And as the company grew, it became harder and harder to get the packages to the railhead where they were mailing them because the roads would rut up in the springtime. So he moved the business to Randolph. And after three or four locations and after a big fire in 1951, the business was moved to the edge of town where it's currently located.
All right. Well, the phones are full, and so let's take some calls. Dick Zondag, our guest. We're going to start with Sue in Waupaca. Hello, Sue.
Good morning, and congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy your products, and I enjoy buying Bear Root stock, and I like to talk to your knowledgeable staff. But I have a question for you. Two of my many Bear Root trees this past spring did not leaf out as well as the rest, about 25% compared to the rest. And later in the season when I was weeding around the bases, I saw that there was a split, but more than a split, almost like a huge gouge on one portion of it. My husband says, oh, rip them out and replant them. I'm looking for odds. Should I or should I nurse them back?
Okay, it was 25% in one part of the tree or was that across the whole tree?
Yeah, I'd say the whole tree. Looks pretty sad.
Okay, what I would do is fertilize the tree, maybe leave it in place. You'll know more this year as to whether the tree will survive or not. If it does survive and you fertilize it, the tree will grow. It'll probably be a little bit slower growing, but just fertilize the tree, water it, you know, give it the best growing conditions you can, and you'll know more by the summer whether it's going to be a usable tree or not. I hate to throw things away, too. As far as that gouge in the bark, if you do keep the tree, the loose bark should be taken off that gouge because that is a spot where insects and disease can get growing. So you cut the loose bark off back to where the green appears, and that's where the cambium is, where it would be the bark would be attached to the tree. And as the tree grows in diameter, a callus will kind of creep across that cut surface and will seal that up. So I guess it kind of depends on first off if it survives the winter. Sometimes when a tree is weak and it doesn't have a lot of leaves on it, the second winter will take it out. If it does survive, fertilize it, water it, you know, give it the best chance of coming through. And I guess from there on in, it depends on how well it grows as to whether you replace it or not.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Sue. Good luck to you. And on to Elaine. And Elaine is in Richmond Township. And what can we do for you?
Hi. I'm calling about ordering perennial flowering plants.
Okay.
What do you receive? I mean, you obviously don't get the flowering plant. What do you receive when you order?
It depends on the plant that you order. Some of them are in pots, but most of the perennials that we sell through the catalog are bare root. And what we do is we package them in plastic bags with either peat moss around them or shingle toe around them. It depends on the plant itself. Some like to be dry, some like to be moist. And so over the years that we've been handling perennials, we have that down pretty well. And so when you get them, as long as the soil is thawed and the excess moisture is moved through, it's time to plant them out, even if there's going to be frost. Because with most of them, you've got, if it's a dormant plant, you plant the root below ground, and that root will establish while the temperatures are coming up. So
would that plant be growing? I mean, if I did this all like in late winter or early spring, and it has been very mild.
Yes, it has.
Well, would the plant, would I see the growth above ground like that first year?
Oh, yes. Yeah, if the plant doesn't grow the first year, you better report it for a replacement. You know, they'll pop out of the ground, you know, within a few weeks of them planting, depending on how cold the soil is.
Yeah.
But my preference when I have the chance to plant bare root versus a potted plant is to use bare root, because the plant then establishes in the soil that it's growing in, if you get a pot, you've got to make sure that the plant isn't root bound, and if it is, then you have to kind of pull some of the roots away from the pot so that it doesn't stay in that area. I mean, we sell a lot of potted perennials in the garden center too, so it's a very viable way of doing it. But for sending things through the mail, we find that the dormant plants work very well.
I have never done that, and I wondered what the success rate would be. And pretty much,
if you do them, and you get them at the proper time and put them in the ground, I would say you probably have a 95% to 98% chance of them growing.
And asparagus also would work that way.
Yes, okay. Yes, it would. All of the bags or the plants that you get will have full instructions on how to plant them. We put a lot of material in that box, so if you read, you should be able to do very well with our plants.
Thank you so very much.
Okay, Elaine, good luck to you. Thanks very much. And I noticed looking at your website that most of your live plant material starts shipping in March and goes through early June or so.
Yeah, for this area, for the state of Wisconsin, most of the plants will be sent out probably mid-April through May.
Mm-hmm. Sort of coincide with going into the ground at that point.
So it's ready. When it comes, it's usually ready to plant.
Our guest is Dick Zondag. He's the president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, and we're going to Waterford and to Mike. And Mike, what's on your mind today?
Yes, hi. I got a question for Dick on day-neutral strawberries.
Okay.
Bought some from you this spring, and they just did fantastic. They had a great crop, but I don't know what to do with them now this winter the way it is, as far as mulching.
Okay, have you put anything on them yet? Okay, I would go out and get some marsh hay or some straw and cover them up, because the biggest problem with perennials when we have weather like this is not the cold weather, it's the freezing and thawing. And so what you want to do is, by putting a mulch on strawberries or perennials, you're keeping the ground underneath it sort of in an insulated state, so that you don't get all the when it gets warm outside, it doesn't freeze thaw the top 2 inches, and then when it gets cold, it freezes the top 2 inches.
Sure.
What happens when you get that kind of a situation is the roots will actually heave out of the ground, and then you'll have problems. So the best thing to do now that we've had some cold temperatures is to go out and get some marsh hay and cover the strawberries with about 4 to 6 inches of marsh hay. And then the middle to the end of March, when the weather starts getting warm again, then you take the mulch off and you let the plants come out of their dormancy naturally.
Okay. Would it be better just to let that ground freeze a little on top for this coming week? It's supposed to get cold again.
Yeah, probably would be good to let it freeze a little bit. But before we get any more warmer weather, and before we get extremely cold weather, then you'd put that mulch on.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Thanks a lot. And when we started talking, I mentioned that we've got buds on all the perennial plants in southern Wisconsin. What have you seen this recently?
Yeah, I mean, some of the tulips and daffodils are starting to push a little bit of foliage up too. Now that we've got this cold weather, the same thing applies there. I think the best thing is to let the soil get cold again, maybe for 2 or 3 days, and then cover with hay or straw, because the ground then will be cold. You don't want those plants growing under the straw. So if you'd covered them when the soil wasn't frozen, it would tend to grow a little bit. So let the soil cool down a little bit, and then cover it with 4 to 6 inches of some kind of straw or hay. Marsh hay is really good, because then you don't have the weed problem. And that will keep the soil frozen underneath them until it's time for them to grow.
Our guest is Dick Zondag. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jim Packard. Keisha Mabra is our on-air phone producer today, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network, and happy to have you along with us today on Garden Talk as we go along with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. And back to the phones we go. There is a line maybe is still open, and if so, the number is 263-1890 in Madison or toll-free at 800-642-1234 anywhere else. And, of course, if you would like to shoot us an email address, it's talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Frank in Port Edwards. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning. Good morning. Dick, admired your new catalog very
much. Thank you.
And been a customer for quite a while. It's nice to see how you've grown over the years. Now, I have a question and then a sort of a comment.
Okay.
The question is, how or what kind of a fertilizer imbalance or whatever causes parsnips to fork and grow a lot of side roots?
It's not the fertilizer. There are two things that can cause parsnips to and other root crops to split and form forked roots. The first thing is if your soil is really hard, sometimes that will cause them to do it. The other thing that can cause them is if we have a lot of wet periods and dry periods. For some reason, that causes them to split, and I think it's more the dry than the wet, but those two things tend to make a parsnip fork in the root.
Well, I don't have hard soil, but possibly the other one might be
caused. As far as fertilizer is concerned, you don't want to use a fertilizer that has too much nitrogen in it. I mean, if you're using a 10-10-10 or something where the first number is the same as the second and third number, that can cause the roots to not form. I mean, then you get all tops and not roots, but I'm not familiar with a fertilizer that can cause roots to split.
Okay. Now, the comment was this. Last summer, I planted autumn cup hybrid squash,
okay,
which is nominally a semi-bush squash,
right,
and a buttercup type.
Right.
And what I got was a kabocha type with vines 16 feet long or more.
Wow. I guess what I'll have to do, my email address is dick@jungseed.com. Do you have an email address?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, why don't you drop me an email, and I'll do a little research into that for you. I'm not sure. I mean, although I do check with customer service, it sounds like you probably got some off types in your thing or maybe even the wrong seed. But what I'd have to do is check and see if we had other customers comment on that.
Well, it's not a serious complaint. But the squash were very tasty. The fruit was good.
Well, the Amber Cup is one of my favorites. I mean, it's a newer hybrid, and it's really a great squash.
But I'm looking for a short vine kind of squash because I have a small raised bed garden.
Right,
area.
And a 16-foot garden. It's kind of funny because we throw a lot of things in our compost pile, and one of the things that started coming out of our compost pile were some pumpkins. And of course, I didn't want to inhibit the stuff from growing. I didn't want to pull it out. And same thing happened. My garden was so full of pumpkin vines last summer. I guess that teaches me a lesson that the compost bin is for composting and not for letting the pumpkin
Your
vines
blessings
and the squash
were overflowing
vines.
Then, weren't they?
Yeah, my garden was full of pumpkin vines.
Okay, thanks.
All right,
thanks,
Frank, thank you very much. And again, that's dick@jungseed.com for the email address. On to Mark in Rock Springs. What can we do for you, Mark?
Mark, Dick and Larry, I was wondering if you are familiar with winter hardy peaches. I have a friend who lives up above Minneapolis, and he said he planted a peach tree last year, and I just wondered how hardy they are. And
yeah, peaches are a real problem even in this area. Now, there are a couple of varieties that are sort of hardy. They're called Moon Gold and Sun Gold. But the problem is they're not very good peach varieties. The ones that we have in our catalog, the Reliance and the Madison, are the hardiest good peaches that you can get. And what I tell people when they're taking peaches is, you know, peaches are self-fruitful, so you only need one tree. So Reliance is the one that I would use. Try it and see if it works. In Randolph, we get a peach crop every third year. Sometimes, you know, if the winter would stay like it is now, we'd probably have peaches coming out of our ears next year. But the problem is the peach blossoms are not as hardy as the leaf buds. And so the tree has no problem growing. It's just the flower buds disappear. And the other problem is peaches blossom so early in the springtime that if you get the combination of a real early spring and a late hard frost, it will take the peaches out that way too. So, you know, when I'm advising people on peaches, I tell them to take one, try it. If the tree doesn't grow, don't even try it again. And you'll see whether you're going to be able to get peaches or not.
Okay.
All right, Mark. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And our next caller on Garden Talk is Rosie in Vilas County. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, good morning. I don't know if this is quite appropriate. I wondered if Mr. Zondag could address a houseplant question.
Sure.
My sister-in-law got a beautiful amaryllis before the holidays.
Okay.
It bloomed beautifully,
right.
Four big bulbs. They went on vacation for a week. She just lightly watered all of her houseplants before
okay.
she left, and she came home to an infestation of what appears to be some sort of like little, you know, tiny little gnat, fruit fly type looking things. And her question is, well, number one, she threw the amaryllis out immediately.
Right.
She said as she picked the pot up, it just swarmed, and that appeared to be where, you know, the source of the problem. She's concerned now about number one, getting rid of all these things, and I know
right.
that's a Phil Pelletieri question, but I wondered if you might have any little secret tips on, you know, how on earth can you just get rid of all those things? And her other question is, does she really need to get all of the houseplants out of her house? Like, is that a real breeding ground for these little creatures?
Okay, what you have is fungal gnats. They are
little
flies that look just like fruit flies,
right.
and they fly up when you water.
Right.
they are there basically after the fungus, you know. And the problem with a lot of the plants that you buy, they have a very high organic soil content, and therefore will produce a lot of fungus. The way to try to control those, there are a couple things that you can do. The fungus grows when you have a very moist condition, and so you want to dry the plants out. You want to keep them on the dry side rather than the moist side, because then the fungus will stop growing in the soil. And there are some parasitic nematodes that you can get that will take care of fungal gnats. There were some soil insecticides that you could use, but they're no longer available. But I think by keeping the plants on the dry side and by there's a nematode, a parasitic nematode that's available in some garden centers.
Okay.
We have one called Grub Patrol in the catalog, although
okay.
we don't mail it in the cold part of the season because they're a little bit sensitive as far as the cold is concerned. But I guess that's what I would do. You know, the amaryllis for sure get rid of because that's probably where they
right.
came from.
But as long as she sort of keeps it on the dry side, she could try and attack this problem. The other plants don't
right.
really have
now,
to go.
The
assuming that the fungus was just on that original plant.
Yeah, no, the fungal gnats are not going to create a problem with the regular houseplants. I mean, they will stick around, and if you want to get rid of them, you know, next summer, then take them outside and then keep your plants a little bit on the dry side, and then there are some treatments that you can use to get rid of them.
Okay.
But
so these gnats should eventually just kind of die out since the source, the fungus, is gone then?
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you so much
yep.
for your help. We really appreciate it.
Thank
All
you for
right,
calling.
Rosie, thank you very much for your call. Dick Zondag is our guest, the president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, which is celebrating its centennial year this year. And for that, they have prepared a centennial commemorative, which includes some favorable comments by Larry Mueller. He says nice things about you in there. And since they're in print, he can't take them back, but... he's a wonderful guest is just one of the things that he says. And I know that people say, well, he's the president of a seed company, but does that mean that he knows horticulture? You got your bachelor's degree here at the UW-Madison.
Yes, I attended the University of Wisconsin after a couple of years at Hope College, and then I got my my undergraduate degree from the School of Horticulture here in Madison. And then I went on to Cornell University for my master's degree in floriculture and ornamental horticulture. So, but, you know, you learn a lot of things by doing them. You know, I think I've learned as much and from working with gardeners. My dad, although he didn't have a degree in horticulture, he went to school for a couple of years. But, you know, by working with plants and by just keeping track of what's going on, you learn a lot from them. You know, the practical growing plants gives you as much knowledge as the, you know, book knowledge. And I guess I had the advantage of having some of that practical before I went to school. And then you kind of, the light goes on as to why things are happening. And so, you know, the University of Wisconsin had a very good, or has a very good school of horticulture. And like I said, a lot of things that you glean, a lot of things that you experience, you then see what is actually going on in the plants, and it gives you a little better handle on it.
Let's go to Daniel in Fox Lake. Hello, Daniel. What's on your mind today?
Good morning, gentlemen. Say, I have a hydrangea plant. It was a blue one. I do not know much else about it.
Okay.
We planted it two summers ago. Last fall, I pruned it back relatively short, probably 2 to 3 inches, and I did not cover it. It took it a long time to get going this spring, but it did come back. What I need to know is what is the proper pruning and covering and whatever for that plant for the winter?
The blue hydrangeas, although they are close to being hardy, are somewhat sensitive to the cold. And so, you know, if you can protect them a little bit, that would be advisable. But most of the blue hydrangeas have the flower buds on the ends of the stalks before they go into winter. And so any pruning that you do in the fall or early spring cuts the flowers off, at least the initial set of flowers. Now, a lot of the blue hydrangeas will blossom not only on old wood, but on new wood. And so the new wood that comes up should have given you some flowers too. But I guess the the pruning scheme that I would follow is as soon as the flowers are done flowering, that's when I would do the majority of the pruning.
So that would be like in late summer.
Yeah, I would say you'll get an initial especially if it's the Nikko Blue, which is the one that seems to be the most hardy. You'll get initial set of flowers sometime in mid-June to early July. If you want to prune it, right after that is when I would prune it.
Okay. So otherwise, just leave it at full height, and how would I go about like protecting it for the winter?
Just a single-layer burlap over it would do it. Other than that, there really isn't a whole lot you can do. The other thing you can do is plant it either on the east or the north side of the house, because hydrangeas are somewhat shade tolerant, and that would protect it against the winter winds, which is another problem that they have too.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that sure helps a lot.
All right, Daniel. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. If you have a question for Dick Zondag, give us a call in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And to Millie in South Range. Hi, Millie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Say, I have a question. I've been trying to start moonflowers for a few years now, and I get them to come up fine. They germinate great. But then they look kind of sickly, and they just die. I know they don't transplant well.
No, they don't. And I guess what I would do is wherever you're going to plant them, that's where I would start them. One of the things you can do with moonflower, which is a kind of a relative of the morning glory, soak the seed either in warm water overnight, because that'll swell that hard seed coat, you know, just put some running water on it overnight, and that will start them swelling. The thing you don't want to do with the moonflowers, over-fertilize it, because if you do, that causes the plant to grow very rapidly, but then you get the spindly growth. So maybe working a little of raw organic matter into the soil where you're planting it would help. And, you know, other than that, full sunlight, the more sunlight they have, the better they like it, and a well-drained soil, too, because if you plant them in an area where the water sits all the time, you'll get root rot diseases. I guess I would also recommend changing where you plant them once in a while, too.
Okay, well, I've never really gotten them in the ground, you know, because I've been starting them in, like, peat pots,
okay,
you know, in my greenhouse. And then, you know, even then, you know, they just don't do well. In, you know,
what I would recommend then is direct sowing them in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, pre-sprout them probably in mid-May, after the danger of frost is gone. Just get the seed swelling a little bit and plant it directly in the soil and see if that works.
Yeah, see, my danger of frost is probably the 1st of June.
Yeah. Well, then what you do is you plant them after that because...
Yeah.
Either that or, you know, if you do plant them earlier than that and you're going to have a frost, all you got to do is cover them with a blanket.
Yeah, yeah.
And that will protect them.
All right. Okay, well, I'm going to give that a try then.
Okay.
One of these days, maybe I'll have moonflowers.
Well, they grow very rapidly. I
they
mean,
do.
It's not a thing that you really have to start indoors. So,
okay.
You know, it's not something that you have to start in April to get any kind of a display.
Right,
I mean,
yeah,
if you start them outdoors, they grow very rapidly and will blossom very nicely once they get growing.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to try that then. Thank
you. All right, Millie. Thank you very much. Appreciate hearing from you. And on to Elaine in Appleton. Elaine, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was looking at the seed catalog, and I see the Wolf River apple trees, and I was wondering if I need two trees for my yard. And then the second question is the cotton Easter bushes grow in the shade, but I was wondering how fast they grow.
Okay, the answer to the first question about the Wolf River, if you live in town, you probably don't need another tree. You do need cross-pollination, but I'm sure Appleton has a lot of flowering crabs and other apple trees. And as long as you have another tree within a stone's throw, you know, the bees do the cross-pollinating. So I think you're probably all right planting one tree. If you want to be absolutely certain, you want to plant two different trees, though. Wolf River apple trees is like planting one. You need cross-pollination. You don't need self-pollination. So with the amount of other apple trees I'm sure that there are in the area, you probably have plenty of cross-pollination available. Okay, as far as the cotoneaster is concerned, they do like to grow, or they do grow in the shade. They will grow either in sun or shade. As far as the growth rate, I would say they have the potential of growing 18 inches to 24 inches a year, but you don't want them to grow that fast because then they get leggy. So yeah, if you're planting them bare root, you plant them about 18 inches apart so that you have a nice full hedge. And then you cut them back to about a foot above the ground to start with so that they branch out near the ground. And then each year, probably the middle of June, the first part of July, you go out with your head shears and just cut the tops off so that they stay nice and full. If you let them just grow so that all they do is grow and you don't trim them back, they tend to get leggy at the bottom.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Elaine. Our guest is Dick Zondag, and our next caller is Jerry in Grafton. Jerry, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a number of questions. I guess the first one is I'm wondering if you're going to start carrying more some more diverse varieties of, like, pumpkins. Like, I know the Rockstar has a real big, distinct stem, and then also some more varieties of gourds, you know, decorative Halloween types of things.
Okay. In the Jung catalog, probably not, but we have a... Actually, Jung Seed owns 9 different catalogs now, and one of the catalogs that we own is R.H. Shumway. And you can go to rhshumway.com, and there is a lot of gourds and pumpkins and things like that in that catalog.
Okay.
I'm not sure that Rockstar is one of them that we have in any of our catalogs right now.
Yeah, because I've seen it at the Madison Farmers Market, and it's really kind of neat. I mean, it's got a big, bold stem, and it's real attractive, and...
I'll have to write that down and see once where it's available.
Yeah. Then the other questions I have are more soil related.
Okay.
I have every year I get I plant summer squash, and I get, like, one picking out of them, and then they, like, it seems like they're cross-pollinating right away with, like, gourds or something, because they get, like wood, and they get all bumpy and...
Oh, really?
Awful.
What I would do is get your soil tested. You know, take a sample of soil to your county agent and have it tested for pH. I'm not sure that that would cure that problem. Just from experience in our garden, zucchini, you know, once you get started, you just, get so many, you're giving them to your neighbors and your friends and everything else until they come out of your ears. So have you used different varieties?
Well, you know what? I don't have any problem with the zucchini. They're fine. But the summer squash, which are planted right next to them, like I said, I get one picking, and then the next thing I know, they're getting bumpy, and they're as hard as rock.
Hmm.
And I plant gourds a little ways away, so.
Usually the pollination will not affect the fruit of the plant that's there. It will affect the seed that's produced from that plant, but usually the pollen doesn't affect the flavor or the taste, except in sweet corn, which you do have to have isolation for some varieties. But for most vine crops, the taste and the type of fruit that you get are determined by the seed that you plant, not by the pollen that comes. Maybe you ought to try a different variety of zucchini.
I also, and this is not zucchini, though. I keep,
okay.
It's summer squash. I'm having the problem with. But I have real sandy soil. I also have problems, like my peppers don't get real big and they're real bitter. And also sweet corn, I can't grow that worth a darn. I get like 4-inch ears and I forget about it and I go buy it at the market.
Yeah, the pepper is what you should do, and with a sandy soil you add a lot of organic matter. If you can get the street crew in your area to bring a load of leaves, compost the leaves, and then add them to the sand, that'll really help you a lot. With the peppers, what you want to do is when you're planting the peppers, drop a couple of matchsticks in the ground right around where the peppers are. Peppers like an acid soil, and what you're doing, there's a lot of sulfur in those matches, and the sulfur will acidify the soil, and that will help with peppers.
I never heard of that. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jerry. Appreciate that. That's not one suggestion that I've heard you make frequently before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, with peppers, they like an acid soil, a little bit on the sour side, and so... If you just take a book match or, you know, anything and drop maybe anywhere from 3 to 5 matches, you know, don't burn them because then the sulfur
right,
is gone.
Right.
But, you know, unburned matches, you just drop them right in the ground where you plant the plants, and it acidifies the soil right in that
just
small
locally,
area.
Yeah,
and it's surprising how much. In fact, if you really want to see how good it does, you put a couple plants that you don't do it. And then you do the matches with others, and then you'll see whether you really need it or not. If you're in an area where you have a highly acid soil, then you probably don't need to do that. But for most people, it really gets you a bushier, a more productive plant by doing it that way.
Dick Zondag is our guest. He's the president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. And this is Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we continue talking with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Dick, I know you're aware of the group The Wild Ones, a nonprofit organization that's formed to promote natural and native landscaping and to preserve biodiversity. And there's a new chapter of the Wild Ones that's been formed in the Sheboygan area. It's called the Tension Zone. So Sheboygan area Tension Zone meetings are the third Saturday of every month. So there's a meeting coming up that's open to the public and open to members as well. It's free. And this is Saturday, January 20th, the presentation on propagation of native plants. Mike Yanni, who's with Johnson's Nursery, will be sharing humor and knowledge on how to start your own native Wisconsin garden plants from seeds and cuttings. That will be January 20th at 10 a.m. at the Elwood H. May Environmental Park in Sheboygan, free of charge to members and non-members alike, thanks to a generous sponsor, donation by their business member Landmark Landscapes. So if you are in the Sheboygan area, the Wild Ones is now formed, and you can get more information by going to their website, and that is www.for-wild.org, for-wild.org. Congratulations to them, and good luck. Let's go to the phones again and to Kay in Milwaukee. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I have a question about Clematis baniculata.
Okay.
I got some seeds from a friend of mine, and they look so darn healthy, and I wonder how to store them until I'm ready to plant them maybe in May.
I'm not sure if Paniculata clematis has a dormancy requirement. What you may want to do is take that seed and if you've got some sand or maybe a mixture of sand and peat and moisten it and then put the seed in that in a plastic bag with the in that sand and peat mix and put it in your refrigerator.
Oh, okay.
Don't do all of the seed that way. I mean, that's how you'd get rid of the dormancy requirement if it did have one. You can try starting some seed directly in the soil in your garden, too. I'd probably plant it as soon as the soil is dried out and the excess moisture is moved through, and then just put a stake there just to, like I said, if I had my books around, I could look up and see if there is a dormancy requirement for Paniculata clematis, but I'm really not sure.
Uh-huh.
I tell you, if you email me at dick@jungseed.com, if you've got an email, I'll look it up and get that for you.
Okay, and when I do plant that, what exposure should I plant that?
Clematis like a sweet soil and a sunny location.
Sunny.
So as much sun as possible, and then you a cup full of lime around the base of the plant every 3 or 4 years really helps them out a lot, too.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks.
All right, Kay, good luck. Thanks very much for your call. The number in Madison for you is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. And, Dick, our next caller is Frank in Green Bay. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Appreciate the call. My question is, I've planted a number of pine trees over the years. I got 2 acres of land.
Okay.
And I occasionally have burnt the grass in the spring, and some of these lower ends of the pine trees, the needles have fallen off, not from the flame, but I suspect from the heat. And is that tree now destroyed, or will these needles eventually grow back? The one in particular I'm talking about is a blue spruce.
The needles that are singed, that are brown, will not reinvigorate. The place where they will grow, if there's still life there, is the buds. They have sort of a bronzy-type bud at the end of each branch, and that's where the new needles will come from. They do not have the ability to resprout needles from the branches once they're gone.
So I should be snipping those off?
No, just leave them. They will come off naturally.
I'm just going to have an ugly tree then.
Well, they will come off next year once the, you know, once the new foliage starts coming on the outside of the tree.
Okay.
You can snip them off if you want to, but the problem is that it would take a lot of work to snip them off. And if you're just going back and cutting the tree back, you know, cutting the branches back, you're cutting the buds off that are going to grow to put new needles on the tree. So I think your best bet is to just leave the tree alone, fertilize it good next spring to encourage growth, and in a year or two it'll look just fine.
Okay, that's all I needed. Appreciate it.
Good, Frank. Thanks a lot. Glad we were able to reassure you there. And Tom is next in Windsor. Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, gentlemen. Two quick questions. First, did I just hear you correctly saying that around a clematis you pour a cup of wine every couple of years?
Yes, they like a sweet soil.
Okay. Any particular? Red, white, anything?
Lime. L-I-M-E.
Oh, lime. Okay. I just said wine.
No. I would like that, too.
No, keep the wine. Drink the wine.
You drink the wine, you put lime on the soil.
Okay. That sounds good.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah,
same here. I don't want to waste it.
No, exactly.
Okay. Also, main question. Do you have much of a variety of prairie plants, prairie flowers?
In the garden centers, we have a rack of prairie seeds, and in season, we do have some of the prairie forbs available. You're probably closest to our Northport store in Madison, and I think they have quite a few of the native plants available there.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. You guys have a good weekend.
Yeah, you
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks very much. And on to Bill in Wausau. Bill, what's on your mind today?
Well, I still can't get over the wine on the clematis.
Yeah.
First of all. But I have a couple of Rosy Lights azaleas that I bought many years ago.
Okay.
And they've been spectacular. The last couple of years, very early on in the season, they're getting attacked by a caterpillar. And I can beat them back, but they're taking a toll, you know, on the foliage.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's something I can do. I'd love to get rid of them permanently. Don't know where they come from. You know, they're small, black, probably an inch long, and they attack the foliage. But you can't see them, you know, if they go into the flowering stage, and as soon as the leaves start to come, they get attacked.
Wondering if the Thuricide, the BT that we have in the catalog for the vegetable gardens would help you, and to spray them before the foliage, spray it on before the foliage comes out. Another thing that comes to mind is a dormant spray. Before the flowers come out, before the leaves come out, you can spray with oil and lime sulfur, and you spray the bush and the ground around the bush, and that's kind of a house cleaning. The oil, if they're coming from eggs, which is probably where they're coming from, the oil will surround the egg and will take the waxy coating off the egg and will make it very subject to the weather conditions, and that will kill it. So maybe try a dormant spray on it and maybe the BT early in the season and see if that doesn't help.
Right. I've been looking for something. It's kind of a dilemma because you get the flowers.
Right.
And then you don't want to spray it then. You know, and okay, I'll try that. And also, you mentioned the peppers. I've been putting Epsom salts.
Okay, Epsom salts will work. I'm not sure that magnesium may give them a little bit of a boost as far as the acidity of the soil. The other thing that magnesium does is it if your soil is deficient in magnesium as part of the chlorophyll molecule makes them very green. Then,
mm-hmm.
So that would work too. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. We appreciate your call. And you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to John next in Mount Horeb. Hello, John.
Hi, guys. I got a question about, I picked up some acorns from the neighborhood here and some walnuts, and I'd like to try to plant them and pot them.
Okay.
And get them to grow and then maybe put them in the ground in a few years. How would I go about that? I got them outside right now, so they got cold.
The acorns from the oak tree, you have to have them in a moist cold, not just cold, because the seed has to imbibe some water before the after-ripening period starts. So a mixture of sand and peat moss, probably 50-50, and then you don't want it wet, but you want some moisture in there. And you don't have to freeze them. In fact, if they get too cold, that after-ripening starts. The after-ripening happens between, I have to think back now. I think 35 and 28 degrees or something like that. But and then with oaks, you can't grow them very long in pots before you plant them because they have a taproot system. And if that taproot is injured, they don't like it very much. Same thing with the walnuts and the butternuts. You want to plant them. You want to plant the nuts where you want them to grow. You can... With the walnuts, because they have a very hard shell, too, you could take a file to them, you know, just a regular file that you'd sharpen a hoe or something with, and you don't have to file through the hard shell, but you have to get the water into that nut area in order for it to start to happen.
Okay, and I would put them in there for how long, and then I would put them in dirt? And is the way I'd go about it?
I would... keep them over winter either in a refrigerator or in a lot of these old refrigerators had the ice box with a shelf next to it. That's actually the best place to put it because then you do get some freezing and thawing. You do it through the winter and then plant them out in the springtime when the warm weather comes.
Okay. I have one other quick question about peach trees. Is there any maintenance I should be doing come springtime here if I don't see anything going on with them? I mean, if they look okay as far as growing, would you recommend spraying? I know they have some of these sprays that you should put on in spring.
Well, the dormant spray is good on any fruit tree. And then peaches are not real disease prone, and so I guess I would only spray them when you see a problem. As far as pruning is concerned, a peach tree grows very rapidly, and what you want to do is make sure you keep a lot of that fine wood out of the tree. And if you do get a crop of peaches, you got to make sure that you prop the branches up, because when you get a heavy load of peaches, because peach wood is very brittle, it'll break branches once in a while. So just keep an eye on it and prop the branches up. They're not very disease prone, so you don't have to spray them unless they have a problem.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, John, thank you very much for your call. Our guest today on Garden Talk is Dick Zondag, who's the president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. We're going to catch up with the latest news, then come back, take more of your calls. We'll be talking with Jerry, Rita, Bob, and we've got room for your question as well. We'll talk about burning bushes and hedges. Probably also get back to more peach questions and pumpkins and gourds and clematis plants as well. So all of this is ahead, and we'll be happy to take your question or your comment about gardening as well. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. That's a toll-free call. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, and this is Garden Talk. Our guest is Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin. And if you'd like to join the conversation, let me give you the numbers. At Madison, it's a local call at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. And we've been talking about problems for perennials with the freeze and thaw cycle. We've talked about fertilizers and winter hardy peaches and varieties of pumpkins and gourds and clematis. And we'll be happy to take your call as well. And Dick, let's start off with Jerry in Prairie du Chien. Let's see. Jerry, there you are. Go ahead. Thanks a lot.
Okay. I've got hedges on the north and south boundaries of our property here.
Okay.
And I'd like to get those hedges to be leafier and bushier.
Okay.
They're and they the first 2.5-3 feet of the hedge is just the wood stems.
Okay.
All the growth seems to be between the 3 and 6 foot level. I trimmed them to 5 feet this summer, and that, again, tremendous growth, but just on top.
Okay. What do you know what plant it is?
I think there's a mixture in there. One of them is that very common hedge plant, which I don't know the name, but it has those little red berries on it.
Honeysuckle, probably, yeah.
And there is some honeysuckle.
Okay. What I would recommend doing, because it sounds like it's an older hedge, rather than taking it right back to the ground in 1 year, what I would do is next spring, or, I mean, you could even do it now, go back into that hedge and cut out the largest stalks that are coming out of the ground, maybe about a half of them. And then what will happen is where those branches are cut off, and you can cut them back to 6 inches or even farther than that, what will happen is they will form new buds, will start to grow out of those old stumps. And then the following spring, cut the others off. And what that does is it starts the hedge over again. And you'll be surprised how fast those sprouts will grow, because you've got a huge root system underground. But for most plants, that works fine. And then as the plant grows, keep cutting it back so that it doesn't get real high. The reason that the plant is leggy is that whoever started the hedge didn't keep trimming it back so that it would keep some foliage near the ground.
We've been here for over 20 years, so that could be me.
Okay.
Who didn't do that.
But that's what I would do. I just, you know, and maybe even a chainsaw or a lopping shears, just go back in and take some of those big branches out of there. It's going to look a little funny for a year. But what that does see is if you leave some of it, the leaves will come out and will keep the plant healthy and will actually give the plant the energy to sprout those sprouts out of that stump. And then next year cut the rest off, and then you started your hedge over again.
So a chainsaw is a suitable tool for taking those larger
Yeah, if you're careful with it, yes.
Okay, well, you know, once that chainsaw gets started, I just want to cut everything in sight. It's hypnotic, but...
Yeah, but I guess with an older hedge like that, I would do it in 2 years. If it were only like 8 or 10 years old, you probably could just cut it off completely, you know, the whole thing. But I think if you've got some bigger branches like 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter...
Many of them are.
Yeah, that's what you've got to start with. Take those off, and you can take them off, like I said, 2 to 6 inches above the ground. And then what'll happen is you'll get adventitious buds starting out of those stumps, and that's where the base of your plant's going to come from.
Great. Thank you very
All
much.
All right, Jerry. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And Rita in Prairie du Sac. Go ahead.
Yes. Mr. Zondag?
Yes.
Is it Zondag or Zondag?
It's Zondag.
Zondag. Okay. I want to know, first of all, if you are going to be at the garden expo that's coming next month.
Probably not. We've, you know, we used to be there every year, but it, you know, with the garden centers here in Madison, it got to be a real chore finding people to man the booths and things like that. And we really didn't look at it as a place to sell stuff. And it seems like it's become a thing where everybody brings baskets and things like that to sell. We thought about having an informational booth again this year. I don't think so, but we may.
I hope you do. I hope you do. And I will tell you this. I know Bronnie and Bob.
Oh, do you?
Yes, because you see, they were here. They
yeah,
lived
they
here.
Lived there th-
and
for many years.
And they lived just a block down the street from us.
Oh, really?
Yes, they did. And so, of course, Bob, you know, being a teacher in
sure.
the elementary school, and I haven't seen them for a while, but except a few years ago, they were at the garden show there.
Yeah.
And I talked to them then. And so I just wondered if you were going to be having, you know, be there at all, because I thought, okay, I can get my information there from the books and you know, catalogs that you are offering at that time. Otherwise, I have to go to the garden center in Madison. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, unless you have a mailing address.
Well, you can, do you have the web?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's the mailing address is just very simple. You just send it to Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin, and the zip code is 53957.
53597?
No, 539.
53957.
Yeah. We have our own zip code.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, just put in there you want a catalog or whatever, and we'll get it out to you.
Right, and the calendars, because I remember I sent a card when it was the 50th anniversary.
Right.
Is that your father or grandfather?
My grandfather started the business. My dad worked for the business for over 50 years, too.
Yes.
So it's
But I sent a card for your grandfather's. Now, what birthday was it? I can't remember.
Well, he lived to be 101 years old. So,
yeah. So I think it was on his 90th or 80th birthday
yeah.
that I sent a card, you know, at that time. So, well, with that, I will let you go.
Okay. All right, Rita.
And thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Yeah, the people that she's talking about, I assume, are related to you?
My brother and sister-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah. My brother was a teacher in Prairie du Sac. And
otherwise, people would be scratching their heads.
Yeah, no, he now works for us. He was a garden center manager. Now he's the buyer, the green goods buyer. So.
And so you're third generation, and,
right.
and your son is preparing to come into the business,
right.
isn't he?
He's in college at Wisconsin Lutheran College. He's a senior, and so in the next year or two, he's going to be joining the business.
All right, let's go to Bob next in Madison. Bob, what can we do for you today?
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and boy, I hope you mention the chainsaw word when you give me my answer. But I have a burning bush that doesn't burn. It's very healthy, you know, green and lush all summer long into the fall, but once it's supposed to catch on fire and start to burn in the fall, it just brown and nothing.
Is it in the shade?
Partial.
Yeah, that's probably most of the problem. Burning okay. bush requires full sunlight to
full sunlight.
Express its full fall color.
There's my answer, so I do get to use the chainsaw.
Yeah, well...
Can I dig it up and transplant it with...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
How big is it?
It's probably, you know, good 4 feet round.
Okay. What I would do, rather than doing it this spring, what I would do in the springtime is take a shovel and dig around the plant and cut some of the big roots. Because a plant that's that old, you'd have to take a pretty big, sizable root ball with it. But if you go around the plant and you cut some of the big roots, what'll happen is the plant will form more feeder roots inside of that area. And then next spring you can, you know, dig it and transplant it. You have a much better chance of it surviving then.
Thank you very much.
Okay, yep. Thank you. And another question or another observation from our yard is that we have a burning bush and sometimes do better or worse. Well, it's underneath the canopy of a large tree right on the curb,
right.
City tree, and so it was in full sun, but not getting full sun.
Right. Yeah, the fall color on almost every plant. I mean, and especially the burning bush, but on most plants. The amount of fall color that you get is in direct proportion to the amount of sunlight it gets, because what happens with a plant when it starts to get into the fall is those sugars will build up in the leaves, and then the sugars will encourage the fall colors, I guess is how you'd say it. And by having sunlight in the day, it makes a lot of sugars, and then the cool nights keep the sugars from being burned up. And so if you have less sunlight, rain seems to wash some of the color out too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've got a real rainy fall, you don't get the brilliant fall colors. But if you have cool sunny days warm sunny days and cool dry nights, that's when you get your best fall color. And burning bush is very, it's very necessary to have as much sunlight as possible to get that fall color.
Okay. Bob, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. And on to Paul in Plainfield, Illinois. Paul, what can we do for you?
I have a question. I have planted last year two rosemary bushes.
Okay.
Probably they weren't very large when they started. Well, they got about, the diameter of a 5-gallon bucket over the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Come this fall, I knew that they're not really for this climate,
right.
And I wanted to try to see if I could preserve them, so I went and got a rose cone and rose coned them. We had a bad windstorm, and it blew one of the cones off, and I noticed that all the rosemary petal or leaves had turned brown. Are they dead?
What you want to do is scratch the bark on them, and if the bark underneath is green, they're still fine. With the rose cone, especially if there are leaves on the plant, the rose cone tends to keep a real humid situation underneath it, and a lot of the leaves tend to die in that situation. And so it may be that the leaves just died, but the bush itself is fine. But you scratch the bark, and if there's green underneath, the plant should come back.
Well, that's comforting to know, because I want to definitely get like a rose hedge, a rosemary hedge. But I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a maintenance nightmare if you're going to try to keep those things. Rosemary is really not a plant that. Especially if we have a cool winter or cold winter, you're going to have a hard time keeping it alive.
Yes. Well, thank you for your time, John.
All right, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Appreciate your call. The number in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Dick Zondag of Jung Seed on Garden Talk today. And let's go to Maura in Coloma next. Hello, Maura.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a rhododendron that looks like it's about to bloom, which is very unusual. It only blooms usually once in May. So I don't know whether to cover it or spray the leaves with some kind of waxy stuff or treat the soil, let it bloom again.
The only thing that I can recommend is a single-layer burlap. Unfortunately, when you have a rhododendron, they're quite high off the ground, and I'm assuming this is an ironclad. It's not a PJM or anything like that?
I have no idea.
Okay. Once they start to move, it's really difficult to slow things down, and they also, once the buds start to expand, they become more susceptible to the freezing damage. Now, I don't think it will kill the plant because the leaf buds are different than the flower buds. The flower buds are those big fat ones on the end of each branch, mm-hmm. and there are leaf buds, which are sharp and down into the plant a little bit farther. I don't think it's a survival problem, but I think you may lose your flowers for next year.
Okay, so single layer of burlap.
That would be the only thing that I would recommend. And burlap, because it's a loose enough weave that some of the sunlight gets through, too, because with a rhododendron, which is an evergreen, it keeps its leaves all winter long, you have to have some sunlight getting through the plant, through that barrier, so that the leaves stay in good shape.
Okay, great. And then for lilacs, I've heard that you trim them once a year, right after they bloom.
That's exactly right, because they're the same type of a plant. They have their flower buds on them right now, and if you'd prune them now, you'd be cutting your flower display off.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks so much.
Laura, good luck to you. Thanks for calling. And let's try Jackie and Ryan Landard next. Hello, Jackie.
Hi there. Last spring, my husband and I planted a cranberry shrub.
Okay.
And it's about 4 feet tall.
Okay.
And we'd like to know what we could do to help it along. Will it bear fruit this summer, or the spring, I mean, or whenever it bears the fruit, I guess, in the fall? Any advice?
There really is nothing that you can or have to do. The cranberry viburnums are very hardy. They do like a little bit of an acid soil, which I think you probably have in the Rhinelander area, but it's just a matter of fertilizing it in springtime when it starts to grow. The cranberry viburnums blossom in early June and then set their fruit, and the fruit ripens in late August, early September. So there really is not a whole lot you can or should do. If it's a newly planted one, it may take a year or two before it becomes fully flowering, but it's really a very easy and dependable shrub to plant.
Okay, and it'll do well on a sunny hill that we've got.
Oh, yeah, they love full sunlight.
And we like the birds, so we thought that would be great, too.
The birds will love it.
It's a beautiful plant in the winter landscape.
Yeah, it is.
Jackie, thanks very much. Appreciate your call. And to Joy in Fitchburg. Hello.
Hi.
Yep.
Jim?
Yep.
Thanks for having him.
Sure.
Congratulations. I remembered your 50th anniversary catalog, too.
Thank you very much.
And I got it. But I have a difficult problem now. And this bush was brought in the junk on the south side.
Okay.
I bought it as a crabapple bush.
Okay.
For flowering crabapple.
Okay.
Now, what has happened is over the last 8 years, the middle part is crabapple, and the peripheral part has become apples.
Okay.
So the apples are growing, and they are all over my lawn at the end of the summer.
Okay.
The deers love it, but I don't. And so what am I supposed to do to get it back to crabapple?
Okay. Are there some crab apple parts in the plant?
Yeah, there's the central part is crab apple.
Okay, then what I would do is the area, and probably the apple is coming either from below ground or just above the ground, because crabs are grafted onto apples, because crabs and crab apples are first cousins. What I would do is get out with a pruning shears and prune everything that's coming out of the base of the plant, and that should take the apple part of the thing away. And then you just have to keep pruning vigorously to keep that from growing again. And once you get the crabapple part of the thing growing vigorously, it more than likely will inhibit the apple part of it from growing. So get a pruning shears, prune it as close to the ground or as close to the trunk as possible. But I would imagine that most of those apple things are coming out from probably 12 inches on down. So everything below 12 inches should come off.
So you have to dig in the ground and get in the 12 inches below the ground.
No, above the ground. Everything
above
from 12 inches above the ground to the ground.
Oh,
you should prune all of that off, because that's the apple part of the plant.
Okay.
So the first foot above the ground.
Right.
Okay. And then, the tree is quite large now. It's about 8-9 foot now. So I don't think we can do it ourselves. We have to call some professional people to do it.
Right, but
it's possible to do it.
Yes, I mean, what you've got to do is inhibit that apple part of the plant from growing, because the crab apple is grafted onto an apple tree, and usually what happens is once the crab starts to grow, the apple part of the tree won't grow. It'll just act as the rootstock. But what may have happened is the crab may have been partially incompatible, or something happened that created the incentive for the rootstock to start growing. And so what you'll find is that the part of the tree that's the apple tree is coming out from a foot above the ground to down below the ground. So anything that's close to the ground should come off.
Joya, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. Have a nice weekend. Jean in La Crosse is next. Hello, Jean.
Hi. I was wondering, I have some rhododendrons on the west side of my house.
Okay.
They don't do anything.
Yeah, they're on the worst side of the house. That's the first thing.
Oh, well, that's kind of what I thought. They were there when I moved there, so
yeah, they like to have the north or the east side. They, in their native situation, grow on the edges of woods where they get some sunlight, but then they get the protection of the woods, so they don't get the westerly winds that blow in the wintertime.
Okay.
Rhododendrons are also acid-loving plants, and so you have to use like a cup full of sulfur around the base of the plants every 3 or 4 years.
Oh, okay.
And then muriacid also helps rhododendrons.
Okay, and so can those be transplanted? They're pretty old plants, but I've never seen a flower on them.
Yeah, what I would do is the same thing I told the burning bush guy, is next year take a shovel and drive it in the ground, or dig soil away down a couple of shovelfuls deep so that you get some feeder roots growing on the inside of the ball, and then the following fall or next spring is when you transplant it.
Okay, and one more question. What's the best place to plant a hydrangea?
A what?
Hydrangea?
Thank you.
Hydrangea?
No,
that's okay. A hydrangea is a plant that will handle both sun and shade. So if it's one of the hardy hydrangeas, you can plant it almost anywhere. There are some of the newer hydrangeas that have different colors that should be planted in a more protected area, which would mean the east or the north side of the house. But, you know, like the Annabelle and the PG and some of those will grow anywhere.
Okay. Can I ask two more questions? Just one about blight. Do you use coffee or vinegar with blight?
It depends on what blight you've got. I mean, is this on a bush or on...
Well, I've got it on my morning glories.
Okay, The big thing with morning glories and with the things like that is to keep them where you have morning sunlight so the leaves dry out. You know, because the disease start as spores in the dew, and if the dew doesn't dry off before 10 o'clock in the morning, you're going to have problems with disease. So the first thing is good ventilation. Don't plant too many of them so that you get a lot of leafy things, and then plant them where they get morning sunlight, and you probably won't have as much trouble with blight.
Gene, thank you very much for that call. I'm sorry that we can't get to John and Lori, but again, if they do have a question, they can email dick@jungseed.com, and you'll provide an answer for them. Dick, thank you very much. Again, congratulations on 100 years of growing, and you have the extended catalog with historical pictures and material about the growth of the company. That's available for people who get the calendar, who get the Jung catalog. You've also got a catalog or a calendar for the first time, a 1907-2007 100 years of growing catalog. That's available at the garden stores,
right,
as is the commemorative edition of the Centennial booklet, celebrating 100 years again, also available at the garden stores while supplies last.
Yep.
Dick, thanks very much for being here.
Yeah,
look forward to your next visit around here. And coming up on Monday, David Williamson Schaefer will be talking with Larry. He's the author of How Computer Games Help Children Learn, here on the Ideas Network.